Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Turn the Page podcast. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with author Chris Kander.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Ooh, thank you for talking to us and for letting us call you about your latest book, which is The Weight of a Piano.
Yes.
So I have the paperback with me right now, but I didn't realize at first that it came out in hardcover in January of this year.
It did. Ooh. Yes.
Oh, very
yeah,
nice.
The paperback came out just, I think, the last week of October.
Yeah, it's a great read. As I like what came from Penguin Random House, of that it's a tour de force about two women and the piano that, I'm going to pronounce this word wrong, inexorably.
Inexorably.
Thank
yeah.
you. Ties their lives together through time and across continents for better or for worse. And like the way you write, because I haven't read your previous novels, but I do know about Whisper Hollow. But and I'm reading it, I'm like, this is so descriptive, and it like makes me think like lyrical how you describe everything. So I really appreciate that
you.
As a reader.
I really appreciate you telling me that. I mean, I think that you know there because music is such an important component in the book. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not certain that I was writing any differently than I normally do, but I wanted the words themselves to sound lyrical or musical because I wanted the sentence level read to sort of reflect the overall theme within the book.
I think it definitely did that. Just even reading the first chapter of going into the forest to listen to the trees to find the perfect one to make a piano, which I was just was that actual like research that you've done? Because I've read in previous interviews you've done that you like really go into research for your books.
I did do a lot of research. Because I'm not musical, I really had to rely on the expertise of other people to understand everything about music or piano playing and ownership. So I actually was able to be in touch with someone at the Blüthner factory in Germany, which is the Blüthner. A Blüthner upright is the kind of piano that is the eponymous one in the novel. And so mm-hmm. they were incredibly helpful in describing for me the way that a piano would have been made in 1905. It's very different than how it's made now. I did take some poetic liberty with the walking through the forest, but I know that Julius Blüthner did do that at one point in his, you know, the development and fabrication of the pianos. He would go and select the wood individually. It probably happened, in reality, it happened a little earlier than it did in this book, but mm-hmm. nonetheless, the image really struck me as incredibly beautiful, that someone who had an ear for the music inside the wood would go and select the trees themselves that would be made into pianos.
Yeah, that was really cool, and thank you for pronouncing the Blüthner, because I was like, is this, while reading it, I was like, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to have to ask her. So thank you.
You're welcome.
But it was really cool to kind of think about that because like everything now these days, it's automated. It's like care and doesn't go into the craft as much anymore. And just reading
Absolutely.
About how much, like not just of him, but all the people that worked with him really dedicated themselves to craft such a beautiful piece. And
thank you. Yeah, I loved that story too. And because the book is, it's as much about the mechanical aspect of one of the protagonists is Clara. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's not a musician, but she is an auto mechanic. And Katya, the Soviet concert pianist, is obviously very musical. But I liked that opening chapter sort of balanced the combination of being mechanically inclined in the creation of the piano with the musical output that it would ultimately have.
Yeah, because to me that like really combines both Clara and Katya, because as you said, Clara is the mechanic. She's, you know, good with this. She's not that musically inclined, which is like me. I mean, I'm not a mechanic. I'm just a librarian. But I mean, I am not musically inclined. I joke with my dad all the time because my family on his side, they are very musically talented. And I'm like, you got the short end, where both me and my sister do not play instruments. We don't sing. We don't do any of that.
I'm the same exact way, actually. My sister is an incredible singer. My daughter plays guitar and ukulele. My husband's a musician. Everybody around me is musical, and I got nothing, not a thing. And by the way, I have to say, you should never say I'm just a librarian, because you all are superheroes.
So, oh, thank you.
Never say that you're just a librarian.
But it's so that was interesting to kind of read, because I felt more of like with Clara, because I don't play anything and I'm not like a concert pianist. So I was like, right. Even though I liked like learning and reading about Katya and, you know, her coming to America and her connection with the piano, I was just kind of like, I see myself more with Clara. Like, I would just bring it and have this as a connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually identify with Clara too. So it was interesting. It was on one hand easier to write Clara because I understand being good with your hands, but not being musical. It was it's a much different experience getting into the imagination and experience of a woman who passionately adores music and is able to create it and is transported by that experience. It was wonderful as a writer to get to do that sort of method acting by putting myself in her experience to imagine what it's like to create music like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because just reading about that, I was like, I wish I had this talent, but I can appreciate listening to it and whatnot. And that brings me to, I found from your website that you have a Spotify playlist for this book.
Yes.
Did you create that?
I did create it. I wanted it to be, because there are a lot of musical pieces that are referenced throughout the novel. Mm-hmm. And I wanted anyone who's really interested in that to be able to easily go and see what those musical pieces sound like, because they are part of Katya's experience and they reflect the mood and tone of each individual chapter where they appear. And so I thought it would be interesting to compile those into a playlist.
No, it's really cool because it makes it interactive for the reader.
Yeah.
So I saw it because it went, I was just like, oh, that's really cool, because like some other authors, like I know, will do like a mood playlist of kind of like, this is what inspired them, or like what they were feeling writing it, or what the characters are supposed to be feeling. And I was just like, oh, like I'm really intrigued, like, you know, because some of the stuff I haven't heard of. I only know like a handful of like classical stuff, but I was just like, oh, this is cool, like to know like this is what they're playing or like what is going on.
Exactly. One piece that is not on that list is the original piece of music that I commissioned that appears at the very end of the novel. I wanted, you know, at one point there was a real connection that I had to this piano. Mm-hmm. You know, right from the beginning when it's being created, it's singular. I mean, it's obviously a focal point in the novel, but it almost becomes a character itself. And as I was writing it, there's so much that was happening to the piano and around the piano. And I wanted to get into the mind and voice of the piano itself. And so there is a chapter that is written in the voice of the piano from that perspective. But I wanted to know if the piano could play music, if that's the language that it speaks, what would it sound like? What would it say? How would it reflect the life that it had lived? Because at the end of the novel, it's over 100 years old. And so I commissioned this original piece of music that reflects mostly Katya's life too, because it starts before, the piano is obviously built before Katya is born, but it's such an integral part of her life. And it is so beautiful. And it was composed by a guy named Connor Scott from Atlanta. And he wrote it, he scored it, and then he recorded it. And it is also on my website. If anyone is listening, wants to go to just chriscantor.com and navigate to the book page, there's a SoundCloud file there that you can listen to. And it's the voice of the piano.
Oh, that's really cool. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it. Because I was just playing on Spotify, and I was like, oh, I like this. Oh, that's cool.
I don't think it's connected to the Spotify playlist because it's actually not on the Spotify servers. So it's something that you have to listen to separately.
Oh, that's still cool. Still fun.
Thank you. Yeah, another way to be interactive with it.
Yeah, that's, and I think a lot of readers like that these days, that you could have that. But you'd said, because it's the piano's point of view, because even in your first like little chapter of the creation of it, the
Claudia Baumeister?
Yes, that.
Yes.
And he's like testing it like right before it's going to leave to go be in someone's home. And it's like, oh, this is the personality. This is, and I thought that was really cool. And
thank
so that
you.
You know, go back to that later in the book and bring that personality, because I'm someone that even if it's like, you know, an inanimate object, I will personify it.
Absolutely.
And it's just interesting when reading about Clara's connection to it, because it's her connection to her parents that died when she was young. And I'm just thinking like, yeah, I would totally do something like that. I'm someone who cried when my parents, like, years ago when I was, I don't know, like 6 or 7 or something, when they were getting rid of their car just to get a new car. And I was like, no, this is our car. And my parents were like, we're getting the same car. It's okay. And I'm like, but no.
It's not. And it's easy to become attached to things. That was sort of the impetus for the whole novel, was mm-hmm. the idea of attachment to objects and how that can be both a blessing and a burden, depending upon the point of view of whoever owns it. Right.
That's true. And I just like that because it makes it relatable, because I know so many other people that are like that with certain objects in their lives.
And sometimes it works and they fit, and other times it's something that is burden, you know, bulky or psychically very heavy. And that, you know, in the case of Clara, the fact that the piano was both emotionally very heavy and physically very heavy mm-hmm. made it an even more complicated relationship, because it represented her lost childhood, her deceased parents, and she couldn't play it, but neither could she get rid of it.
Yeah, that, it's, as you said, heavy.
Yes. Hence the weight of a piano.
So what exactly inspired you to write this book?
It was literally a conversation like what we just said. It was, mm-hmm. I overheard a woman talking about the fact that she had just gotten rid of this piano that her dad had given her when she was a child, and how incredibly difficult it was for her to let it go, even though she had been really wanting to get rid of it for several decades.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what inspired me to think about what kind of things do we all have in our lives? They can be small things that, you know, I, for example, have this little pewter rabbit that belonged to my step-grandfather, and that's an easy thing to have. I love it, I cherish it. But what if it were a piano and I weren't a musician and I couldn't play? Would I want to carry around a piano for the rest of my adult life? And at what point is it okay to let it go? And that was really the impetus for my attachment to this idea as a story. Just what would I do? And what do other people do? And I think that for one of the reasons that I write at all is because I want to answer those kind of big questions about what would I do in this situation? What's typical? What does it feel like to experience it from somebody else's perspective? And that was why I wanted to look at it from the dual perspectives of someone who felt like it was everything to her, who was Katya, and someone mm-hmm. who was incredible, you know, felt like it was a beast and a burden to her, and that was Clara.
It's definitely interesting, because just even think about it now, like when you move into a new place, or if you like buy a home or go to a new apartment, you have to decide what of your stuff can fit, what are you willing to bring, like,
right.
And I see that because my in-laws are moving to a new place, and they're like, well, it really just rang true, because we were talking about this last night, and they had a decorator coming because they're going into a community that's like one of those 55 plus.
Right.
And the owner company like has decorators to like work with you and whatnot. And my father-in-law is like, just tell them what we need. We're paying by the hour. They don't need to know the history. They don't need to know everything. My mother-in-law's right. like, but they need to know why it's important, why I like it. Like, yeah. And he's like, no, we're not paying to tell them stories.
But it's an incredible impetus that we have to tell the story about an object, because without the story, it's meaningless. It's
yeah.
just an object. It's only relevant and important and psychically weighty when there is a story attached to it. And I understand the need for her to tell them why it's important, and also why your father-in-law says, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, unless the story lives inside of you, then it doesn't mean as much. So hopefully she's been able to get some of that off of her chest somewhere.
Oh yeah. She said to him, she's like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Like, this is happening. Can't stop me.
Right.
And I mean, they managed to get along, because this happened yesterday morning, and I heard the story last night. And she's like, "Nope, I'm gonna tell whatever stories I want of the history of these pieces to know, like, this is who I am as a person, to help me figure out our new house." And I was like, yeah. "I get that. I would do that."
I've had a lot of people after the release of the book
mm-hmm.
want to tell me their own piano stories. A lot
oh,
of
wow.
people have them. A lot more than I even realized. You know, I knew that people
oh, definitely.
Would have stories about objects and artifacts that they were connected to in some way, but I didn't realize how many of them were actual pianos. And part of it is because they are so heavy and cumbersome, it's not easy to get rid of them. And
no.
In fact, there was an estate dealer that said it's easier to get rid of a cat than a piano. And I understand that, because people also don't play as much as they used to. We've got other ways to be entertained and to entertain ourselves. And so people don't necessarily own and practice and play the piano the way that we once did, maybe 100 years ago, when that was a real form of community and entertainment. And it's fascinating to me to hear people become really emotional when they want to express the story behind, you know, the piano that their children played growing up, or that they were given as children. And I wonder what's going to happen to all these pianos as these generations get older and downsize or
yeah.
are deceased and have to get rid of them. Where are all the pianos going to go?
That's a good question. It makes you think about it, because even just seeing driving around Long Island, like, there used to be like a bunch of music stores, and specifically piano stores, I remember driving around and seeing. And you don't even see that as much anymore, because people
right.
aren't buying them. I mean, I grew up knowing that, like, families and friends that had a piano, whether it was like a Steinway or something, like maybe even just like one of those keyboards to practice on. And I was like, yeah, you don't really see them. And even if people don't play them, though, they do become like a focal point in a room,
right?
Because they're just
yeah.
so like grand.
They are.
Well, like the like real pianos. I wouldn't say the keyboard's grand, but
no, perhaps not. But maybe grand to the owner of it,
who's yeah.
playing it. Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting. I know, of course, that a lot of my people that I interviewed were very proud owners of pianos, and I love to see see them in their homes and listen to them play. And they really do have individual personalities, it seems like. They have, you know, different tones. The Blüthner, for example,
mm-hmm.
Has a trademark that they call the peerless golden tone. That's the way that they describe a Blüthner, regardless of whether it's an upright or a grand. And I just
okay.
love that. I love the idea that there are these, you know, that because of the manufacturer or the wood, whatever that they're using materials, they do take on certain recognizable tones.
I never even like thought of that when it came
yeah.
to, but it makes sense, because you have that with other instruments as well. Like with guitars, you could have different sounds depending on
right.
who the maker is.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess I'm
and
more
to
used to
that,
because my dad has an acoustic, and I'm just like, oh, okay.
Right.
Not that he plays it. It just sits in a closet right now.
Oh,
but
well,
that's easier to carry around and move than a
yeah.
piano.
A little bit easier for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe you can inspire him to start playing it again.
Oh, no. He gets inspired by my cousins.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And he's someone that is somewhat musically inclined.
Mm-hmm.
So he has his guitar. He used to have a set of bongos. I don't know what happened to those. I haven't seen them in a while. And then he grew up with a house with a piano, and I think like one of my uncles took it when my grandma like sold her house and moved to Florida.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, that's cool. I remember like my older cousin trying to teach me the piano, and I'm just like, this is never like, I don't understand notes. This is not going to happen. I'll just watch you. I'll support you.
Yes. That's so. Kind of how I felt about it. As much as I wanted to, I just didn't have it in me.
Yeah,
but at least I could write about it.
No, which is really cool because you could not only appreciate it as a fan of music, but then you could show readers and have them begin to appreciate it too.
I certainly hope that that's true. Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that.
You're welcome. So I know this is your third book.
It is, it's my third published book. I have a children's book out as well that came out in 2013. Accidentally, that's not my focus, but that was fun too. So yeah, my third published book. I have one in a drawer and another one that's been put aside, and I've just started a new one.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, thank you.
So what's it like writing the books?
In what way?
Like, what's like your writing process? Like, are you someone that dedicates like the morning or a few hours a day to writing, or it just kind of flows whenever?
I'm very disciplined about writing. When I've got a story underway, I write every day, with exceptions. You know, emergencies mm-hmm. happen, and I'm not precious about the time or the place, but I do tend to write when my kids are in school. And during the day, in the morning, usually is when I'm kind of most productive. But it's very flexible. I have a quota that I want to get done each day, just because I like that sort of sense of moving forward, of progress. And sometimes it takes me an hour, sometimes it takes me three. But I very rarely spend all day writing, because I have other things that I have to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like I'm as productive that way anyway. So it works for me to just spend maybe, you know, 1 to 3 hours a day working. I prefer to work in my home office because it's quiet and I'm surrounded by my favorite books.
Oh, that's
nice. But I
can
really work anywhere. Yeah.
Because I asked that since it's National Novel Writing Month for November.
Oh, yeah.
And it's our library, we started last year to kind of work with people with that. So we're a come right in space that we registered. So if people want to use the library to write their books or short
How
stories.
Wonderful. Do you have a lot of people taking you up on the offer?
Like a handful.
Yeah, I can't imagine writing a novel in a month.
Oh, yeah, because it's the whole NaNoWriMo National Novel Writing Month is to write like 50,000 words in the month.
Right.
And
right.
I just see people writing online of like, oh, my God, I've hit like 20,000. Oh, I don't know. I'm so behind doing this. So, I mean, we'll post like, you know, if I find tips or advice on the Internet, I'll post that to them because I don't really write. I tried writing when I was younger and then I got out of it. I like writing with like my friends if we want to like. Just like play around and we don't want to watch TV or something, we'll just like create our own worlds, which is why I guess I like role-playing games. I could do that.
Or
but,
reading.
Yeah. And so we offered this year, we actually have a dedicated, on Wednesday nights, we'll have people come in and use our space and we'll give them some snacks. Because
oh,
who doesn't
nice.
Love snacks? Yes, yeah, so we try.
I think that's a great idea. I think, you know, I've known some people who have done it, and I really admire that sort of frenetic pace, but it certainly doesn't work for me. I need a lot more time kind of to stretch out into the idea of a story. But
okay.
If someone knows what they're doing, then and they can do it, I have nothing but admiration for that.
Yeah, that's because I, like, when looking up the, when we did it last year of, like, actual published authors who have done it, I was like, wow, that's really impressive. I would,
yeah,
it just because to me, I while I could appreciate a deadline and working towards that, to have it be mm-hmm. so short, it would get me all worked up and
yeah.
I'd be like, I can't do it.
I mean, I think it's fabulous for those that are inspired by those kinds of deadlines, but like I said, not for me. Wish everybody else well, though.
Yeah. So do you have any other advice for aspiring writers that might be listening?
I definitely think that reading and reading as much as you can in your own genre, as well as across genres, just to get the idea of how a story flows. And I think, you know, even people who read a lot don't necessarily know how to translate that experience of reading into writing. So do it with, do it consciously, read consciously, be aware of how a story is unfolding at the pace and the kinds of details that the author is providing, so that when you're sitting down to write, you can do the same. You can try to emulate that flow, that pace, those details. And you know how when you started driving, you could be, you would, you know, think that you knew where you were going, but having only been a passenger all those years, it's a much different experience when you get in the driver's seat. And I think that reading is like that, you know, reading for pleasure and escape and entertainment, but reading to understand how to write is a completely different experience. And so I think that that's a great way to self-educate for aspiring writers.
That's really good advice.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Because not that, like, I'm a writer, but I like just even that perspective to get a different thing as being a reader, mm-hmm. which is really nice.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people have this misconception that they have to study or go to school specifically or workshops in order to learn how to write. And I think that it can be a very organic thing. And you don't, it's not required to go and study or apply to workshops. They can be helpful and useful, but certainly not necessary.
Yeah, because most people think you have to like sign up and take training in the workshops. But you
right.
can just, you could start at home or in the library or in a coffee
exactly.
shop.
Exactly. I think that's a perfect way to start.
Hey, do you have, because I know one of your published books is short stories, the 11
no,
stories?
No, it's actually a double entendre. It's,
oh.
They are individual chapters, but they're very tightly linked around a character, but it takes place in an 11 story apartment building.
Oh, okay. That's why, because I saw the title and I was like, oh, cool. Short stories.
Yeah. But I do enjoy writing short stories, but I much prefer the novel form, but that it is a novel. 11 stories is a novel. It just happens to have a very unique structure.
Well, that's really cool. So I'm very happy we got to talk about not just this book, but some of your other stuff and what you've written, because listeners always usually like being like, oh, that's really cool. What else have they written? And like want to go through everything.
Right.
I know
right.
that because I'll do that if I find something I like. I'm like, I got to read everything else now.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. I read somewhere recently, somebody suggested that when you discover a writer that you haven't read before, mm-hmm. start at their first book and move forward chronologically to see how the writer has evolved in her craft. And so that is an interesting idea, I think, but I don't necessarily, you know, recommend uh-huh. it in all cases. But if, you know, I think in my case, all of my books are very, very different. The things that they have in common are there's typically a musical component in each one. And I really love to have multiple protagonists, because I find, you know, people to be so fascinating, and to see the same thing evolving
yeah.
from different points of view is incredibly interesting to me. It's a way of, you know, practicing, rehearsing life.
Yeah. It always, it's good to always get a different perspective of the same thing happening, because it opens your viewpoint on your world.
Right. Yeah.
But
it
just
does.
To let listeners know, we do have Chris's books at the library. It's available.
Thank
you could
so
ask
much.
A librarian. We'll help you get it. There. And I know it's also available as an audio as well. I was
it
debating
is.
On listening to it, specifically this one, The Weight of a Piano. But since we got the book sent, I was like, I'll read the book. It's right here.
I'm so glad you did. Audio version won an award because Cassandra Campbell, she's an incredible audiobook narrator, and they incorporated the musical piece that I told you about.
Oh, they did that in the audiobook?
In the audio,
oh, wow.
in the intro, and in the conclusion. And she does the accents really beautifully, and she did an amazing job, really. So I highly recommend people try that if you're prone.
Oh, that's really cool.
If you prefer audiobooks, this is definitely a good one to do because of her.
Oh, awesome. I'll have to listen to some of that then, because I do like audiobooks, but it's mostly because of a commute that I have. So yeah. I'm like, oh, this is a good way to read, and always having a good narrator works, especially if they can do accents. Because if they can, it's just kind of like, oh. not horrible, but...
Not horrible. Yeah, this would be a good one to try.
Oh, awesome. So, listeners, this was talking with Chris Kander about her latest book, The Weight of a Piano. It is not only highly reviewed from the Washington Post and New York Times Book Review. I definitely agree with them that it's intense and imaginative. But you also have starred reviews from Kirkus, Library Journal and Publishers Weekly, which is cool because I know Kirkus does not give stars lightly.
Kirkus has been very good to me. I'm very grateful to them. They've been incredibly supportive of all of my work, and I was delighted that they felt that way about The Weight of a Piano.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking with us, Chris.
Thank you. I enjoyed our chat, and I'm grateful
me too.
That you read the book, and thanks to the potential readers out there who are listening.
All right. I'm Stacy, and I'm going to close this chapter on Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.